Here are the stories we're covering this week in the Category5.tv newsroom. The FCC has approved SpaceX's plan to launch nearly 4,500 broadband satellites. Fed up with Facebook data slurping, Firefox has a cunning plan. The patches Microsoft released for Meltdown in Windows 7 actually made the operating system less secure. And last year's Pokemon Go Fest attendees got their tickets refunded, but that was not enough. These stories are coming right up. Don't go anywhere.
Jeff Weston.
Yeah, man.
You're building a brand new, beautiful website.
What?
Aren't you?
No. Am I?
Oh, you're a terrible actor.
What?
This is where acting comes into play.
Oh, I didn't know we were acting.
You're supposed to act.
Okay, fair enough. All right.
Yeah, I'm building a really cool website. Are you building a really cool website? Just because Jeff is confused doesn't mean you have to be. Visit cat5.tv/dreamhost to sign up for unlimited web hosting for your website with unlimited email accounts, MySQL databases, the latest version of PHP, WordPress, and more, and even a free domain name registration. It's less than $6 per month, so sign up today. cat5.tv/dreamhost.
This is the Category5.tv newsroom, covering the week's top tech stories with a slight Linux bias.
I'm Sasha Rickman, and here are the top stories we're following this week. The FCC has approved SpaceX's plan to launch nearly 4,500 broadband satellites. SpaceX has received U.S. approval to launch 4,425 low Earth orbit satellites, a key milestone in its plan to offer broadband with high speeds and low latency around the world. The Federal Communications Commission issued an order approving SpaceX's application with some conditions. SpaceX intends to start launching operational satellites as early as 2019 with the goal of reaching the full capacity of 4,425 satellites in 2024. The FCC approval requires SpaceX to launch 50% of the satellites by March 2024 and all of them by March 2027. SpaceX's network, known as Starlink, will need separate approval from the International Telecommunication Union. The FCC approval is contingent upon SpaceX receiving this. Like other operators, SpaceX will have to comply with FCC spectrum sharing requirements. Outside the U.S., coexistence between SpaceX operations and other companies' systems are governed only by the ITU radio regulations as well as the regulations of the country where the Earth station is located, according to the FCC. SpaceX and several other companies are planning satellite broadband networks with much higher speeds and much lower latencies than existing satellite internet services. SpaceX has said that it will offer speeds of up to a gigabit per second with latencies between 25 milliseconds and 35 milliseconds.
Whoa!
Yeah, those latencies would make SpaceX's service comparable to cable and fiber, while existing satellite broadband services have latencies of 600 milliseconds or more. SpaceX states that once fully deployed, the SpaceX system will provide full-time coverage to virtually the entire planet. SpaceX's application drew opposition from other satellite operators who raised concerns about interference with other systems and debris as well. The FCC dismissed some of the complaints. For example, OneWeb wanted unreasonably large buffer zones between its own satellites and SpaceX's. The FCC says that if operators fail to agree on a coordination plan in the future, the commission may intervene as appropriate.
Okay.
So,
cool story.
That's nuts. I don't even know how this is possible. How can they get 25 millisecond latency with satellites? Because the speed of light to a satellite and back to Earth would not even, wouldn't it be longer than that? Maybe it's optical. Maybe it's lasers.
We're talking about having all the satellites up there by 2024, at the very latest 2027. How much has technology advanced in the last 6 years?
Well, that's how it goes, my friend.
And how much do you think it's going to advance even that much further in 6 to 9 years?
Mm-hmm.
It's very possible you're going to see technologies on those satellites that we don't currently have right now.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. You think that's what it is? They know something we don't know.
It's possible. But what I think is cool about this is the potential for internet around the world.
Sure.
Yeah. the entirety of the planet.
Like, that's mind-boggling.
Forget about third-world nations. Think about our studio.
That's exactly what I was actually thinking about the studio when I read
think
the story.
About, I'm like, I mean, yeah, there's the obvious, like, third-world nations and disaster zones and things, but there are still places in Canada that don't have internet.
This place.
What?
I know.
But here's the interesting thing. Think about, because this is satellite, and I used to install satellite internet.
Okay.
You have to have your dish.
Sure.
So you're going to have SpaceX-trained dish technicians around the globe. Talk about international job security. Mm-hmm. Like, you get in as a dish tech at SpaceX, you're good for life. You can go anywhere in the world, and with the advancements we have, I mean, you've got those earbuds for other languages. Mm-hmm. You could literally install around the world.
Maybe they could make those satellite dishes solar panels, and it could power itself.
And they could create base stations that get the connection and then distribute it over traditional Wi-Fi like network cable.
It's totally a cool story.
Sure. But
the one
lots
thing
of potential.
With satellite is weather impacts it.
That's
as
the thing.
Soon as you get some bad weather, it interferes with the signal, you're done. So it'll be very interesting to see if they found some way to cut through weather.
This is it, though, that I'm thinking 25 millisecond latency, Jeff.
Right.
That's impossible with radio satellite. They must be using optical technology. I don't know.
Or
this.
Exaggeration.
Or, no, if they're looking for like regulatory approval, well, they have the tech.
Yeah. Right.
But would something else be able to get through, or some frequency be able to get through at a faster bit rate and lower latency?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Or how low orbit are these satellites? Also known as drones.
Yes. And that's the other thing, is that there are companies that are working on, like, drone-based operations, and maybe they'll work as intermediaries between the satellite network and drones in the sky.
That would cut down the time. That's true.
It might. Or if they start putting proxies in space.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a movie. Mm-hmm. Proxies in space.
From a security standpoint, though, all it takes is one breach of their security system. If you have internet around the globe that everybody's on the same system, you breach that once and you have access to everybody's information, like, they're going to have some wild security.
Sure. Yeah. The internet as a whole, though, just the very nature of it is that it is a distributed network.
Yes.
So it depends on so many hops and so many interconnections. But you're right. As soon as it's all coming from one central service and one central service provider.
So many cool things. I can't wait to watch this develop over the next couple of years.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, speaking of security, fed up with Facebook data slurping, Firefox has a cunning plan. Sensing an opportunity in Facebook's squandering of public trust through its previously unrestrained giveaway of users' data, Mozilla on Tuesday unveiled a defense against the social ad biz. And what was that defense? An add-on for Firefox called Facebook Container. The Facebook add-on, as its name suggests, works to contain Facebook's tracking attempts in an effort to provide a refuge from the internet advertising
I throw words in there.
Panopticon. Among similar lines, Mozilla last
stuff. I know, right?
I even Googled how to say that earlier.
Okay.
Along similar lines, Mozilla last week said that it would stop advertising on Facebook in an effort to encourage CEO Mark Zuckerberg to improve Facebook privacy settings. It also said it plans to implement a basic ad filter in Firefox later this year. Mozilla began developing containers for Firefox in 2016 and started deploying them last year. The technology provides a way to create context tabs in which browser-based data can be sandboxed. Facebook Container implements a container specifically for Facebook to restrain its informational reach. Facebook tries to track interactions on third-party websites that have implemented Facebook technology, such as the like button or the Facebook login. The add-on keeps Facebook in a separate container to prevent it from following your activity on other websites. While Facebook Container may help a little, it does have have its limitations. For example, Facebook ads employ links that pass tracking IDs outside of the Facebook container, making it possible for third-party ad firms to associate Facebook authenticated profiles with an external profile.
We've had this discussion where, you know, they say that they're collecting data anonymously, but they're doing so in such a way that they could make those connections.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And connect the dots and say, oh, that's actually Jeff Weston.
But they're collecting it anonymously.
Oh, yeah.
But the data, it's traceable.
It can be traced.
Yeah. What does sandboxing data mean?
Well, kind of like what it sounds like. When you sandbox something, you're creating you're putting it in a box. Mm-hmm. And the word sandboxing is traditionally used by developers. Mm-hmm. We sandbox applications so that as we're building them, as we're modifying them, we're not affecting those who are publicly using it. So if I wanted to sandbox my application, I've created a copy of it that I'm working on in the back end, and it's the same application, but then I can go live or just scrub the sand like feng shui or whatever and get rid of the changes. So in this case, the sandbox is taking Facebook, putting it in its own container, as the word is, putting it in a sandbox so that it is completely separate from everything else, so that it can't communicate outside of its own sandbox.
Right.
And then if you want that information to be transferred back, traditionally a sandbox can be transferred back. In this case, you would just close it and it's gone. Kind of like, I guess, what you would expect from private browsing, mm-hmm. for example, where you're in a sandbox browser, mm-hmm. for example. So as soon as you close it, gone. Everything's gone.
Right.
Good job.
I can't help but think, you know, great effort, but is it really going to make a difference? I mean, Facebook is such a large conglomerate for collecting this data.
Sure.
I'm sure that somebody somewhere is going to go, here's a quick workaround, and then it's useless.
I don't know. The thing is that I think and I hope that this stuff happening is going to make Zuckerberg and Facebook say, maybe we need to take a different approach. Maybe we need to do something a little different.
Dial it back a little.
People have been trying this since the inception of Facebook. I mean, when Facebook first came out, I remember people were saying, well, hold on. What do you mean I don't have to give you permission to access everything? That's the way it was.
Hey, you're using it for free, my friend.
Right. But I mean, up until the point of Facebook, everything was, your data is private. We won't share anything unless you give us explicit permission. And Facebook goes, let's turn that around. We're going to share everything unless you tell us not to.
Okay.
Right.
And so Facebook has changed the way that everything has worked. And that's what they've always done, is broke the mold and said, we're going to do it our way. So I don't see this is going
to
make a difference.
Has the world changed and to the point where now we are so technologically connected that the world has changed? Mm-hmm. We can blame Facebook. We can say it's a Facebook problem, but how many people are running Windows 10?
Right, but just the mindset in society has accepted this kind of information.
Sure.
They don't like
Again,
it.
How many people installed Windows 10?
Ooh, right.
It's free.
Right.
No, it's not.
No.
But I mean, if you look at Facebook trends, right now the biggest growing trend is 50 plus for Facebook users.
Demographic-wise.
Demographics. Mm-hmm. It's the older generation that are going,
They haven't figured out how to delete their account yet.
That's right. But, you know, Facebook has, it's just like you look at, say, Coca-Cola that owns so many food companies.
Yeah.
Facebook has got their fingers and tentacles
Absolutely.
Into so many other things. Like, you're not going to be able to get away from it. And I realize this sounds almost defeatist in a mentality, but there's so many other ways that they're going to collect this information. One add-on for a browser, is it really going to make that difference? I hope it does, but I have to go, we'll see. I can't see the Zuckerbergs awake at night going, oh my goodness, Mozilla, like you've just ruined my business plans.
Not happening.
Yeah,
I
don't see it.
Yeah, I hear you.
So, good effort though.
good effort on you there, Mozilla. It's a good try.
Effort. Yeah,
I guess.
Oh, you deleted your Facebook account. That's a good try. Valiant effort. You have done nothing. You have achieved nothing.
Wow.
I know.
Jeff, I'm so happy you're here.
I just crush hopes and dreams.
I know, right?
All right. The patches Microsoft released for Meltdown in Windows 7 actually actually made the operating system less secure. You'll want to install the March update right away if you can avoid broken networking. Microsoft's January and February security fixes for Intel's Meltdown processor vulnerability opened up an even worse security hole on Windows 7 PCs and Server 2008 R2 boxes. Microsoft's early Meltdown fixes for 64-bit Windows 7 and Server 2008 R2 left a crucial kernel memory table readable and writable for normal user processes. This, in turn, means that any malware on those vulnerable machines or any logged-in user can manipulate the operating system's memory map, gain administrator-level privileges, and extract and modify any information in RAM. The problem boils down to a single bit accidentally set by the kernel in a CPU page table entry. This bit enabled read-write user mode access to the top-level page table itself. On Windows 7 and Server 2008, that PML4 table is at a fixed address, so it can always be found and modified by exploit code. With that key permission bit flipped from supervisor only to any user, the table allowed all processes to modify the table and thus pull up and write to memory addresses that they are not supposed to reach. Windows 8 and 10 are not affected. The March 13 patch Tuesday updates contain a fix that addresses this permission issue, and a subsequent emergency patch from Microsoft should close up the issue. In short, patch your Windows 7 and Server 2008 R2 machines with the latest security updates to protect against this OS flaw. Otherwise, any processes or users can tamper with and steal data from physical RAM and give themselves admin-level control. Fingers crossed your system isn't among those that will suffer networking woes caused by the March security patches. Microsoft security updates this month broke static IP addresses and VNIC settings on select installations, knocking unlucky virtual machines, servers, and clients offline.
Whoops.
Yeah.
So we've got a patch that has made things worse, which mm-hmm. we've patched, and then that patch didn't fix the patch, and then so we've released another patch, and you need to patch this patch with that patch. That's Microsoft update for you.
Do they do it on purpose? Do they test these things?
Oh, sure.
Do they test these? Well, how do you not know?
That's a great question, because I feel like when you're a company like Microsoft that has been doing this for so long, your ability to test should come first before you release something that's broken.
Right.
I think.
To be fair, it would be incredibly difficult for any company of any size to test on every scenario. Mm-hmm. So just to be fair, testing would be very, very difficult. But it's an unfortunate case of we updated, we patched, we patched, we patched the patch, we patched the patch, the patch, and it's a mess. And
so if you never update, you're fine?
No. No. Quite,
no, I know
quite
that.
The contrary.
It's scary that you really, when you hit, you know, I don't even know if you choose to update on Microsoft. I think it just does.
Let's just say you've got to update, and when you think you're done, you're not done.
You're not done.
No.
And then you think you're done, and you're not done. You think you're done, and you're not done.
And that's when you go to Linux.
Exactly.
It works. All right.
Last year's Pokemon Go Fest was a disaster for the game's developers, Niantic. The company has now settled a class action suit that was filed as a result for more than $1.6 million. The event was plagued with problems from the outset, with the game crashing frequently and leaving most players unable to use the app. In the wake of the underwhelming festivities, Niantic issued full refunds to the fest's attendees, $100 worth of in-game Poke coins, and it issued an apology, with a spokesperson saying the staff were horrified by the situation. Their efforts to smooth things over proved to be insufficient, with the affected parties demanding that their travel costs be reimbursed too. A lawsuit seeking expenses was put together in July last year. Now Niantic is settling the lawsuit with a $1,575,000 payout to cover the costs of travel, accommodation, car rental, and other expenses incurred by a large chunk of the 20,000 attendees. According to documents from a Chicago court pertaining to the suit, there are a few caveats. Claimants will have to have checked in through the into the event through the app and will need receipts for expenses amounting to more than $107. Any money left over after the settlement will be donated to charity.
Speaking of companies that should really beta test their software.
Oops. I didn't think people playing Pokemon Go and going to a Poke thing would also have car expenses.
Yeah. People were hooked on this thing when it first came out.
Well, people died when it came out.
Oh. Oh, just not worth it, folks.
No. So, wow. I mean, obviously you're going to travel for these kind of events, but with, I mean, the story is about how the app was crashing and people couldn't use it.
Sure.
But then you had to have logged in order to get access to the money.
Oh, that's smart. That's a smart little
loophole. Let's hope you were able to get there.
Like, that right there sounds like, we'll give you the cash, but we know you couldn't get in, and you need to get in to get the cash, so sorry.
I don't know, because I'm sure that they would have been able to check in at some point. Even though the apps are crashing and crashing and crashing, you must have been able to get.
Maybe.
I hope.
Now,
what, I hope. Otherwise, that is
just a server issue. Like,
think about, you know, let's have a party for this new software. Maybe 20,000 people showed up.
They were not expecting that. That happened at the Toronto Mac and Cheese Festival. People just show up in droves.
And they would run out of mac and cheese, right?
They did. It was a travesty.
But here's the thing. Guaranteed you've got more than 20,000 people playing globally.
Right. But they're not centralized on one node in one location, all in one place, connecting to the same tower.
But okay, but that's not a Niantic issue. If that's cell phone
it is
tower
if
issue.
You promised that this is going to be a wicked party for 20,000 people and it wasn't.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just having a hard time wrapping my head around it. But I mean, if they said, hey, we're going to do an online Poke gathering wherever you are, we're going to deposit, you know, coins in your area.
That would have been better.
You'd have more than 20,000 people playing.
But it would be distributed over a larger
area. But
you're
still checking into the server. So why is it that because they were physically close that it caused it to crash?
Geolocation.
Oh.
Geo-coordinated server allocation of CDN assets. That's just a guess. So you take...
Did that even make sense?
Absolutely it did.
Okay.
Content distribution networks. CDN. Yeah. Content distribution networks.
So okay, gotcha.
When you go to our website, category5.tv, it finds a server that's near you and gives you a copy of the website from that server so that it's nice and quick for you.
Right.
Now, when we do a broadcast every Wednesday live, we're sending this out to a central server, and then that server sends it out to our other servers, and then it goes out to the viewers. So
right.
When we get hit with thousands of views simultaneously, they're not all coming to us. They're coming to our endpoints.
Right.
Okay. So now flip that and say, hey, everybody, let's all get together in Barrie, Ontario during a live broadcast. Here's our Wi-Fi access. Connect in and let's watch the show. And
all
those thousands of people that normally are distributed over all these different nodes,
they're in one spot.
Are in one spot connecting to one central server, and that can't handle it. So infrastructure-wise, it needs to be distributed. If you centralize that many people without being ready for it,
right,
you're in big trouble.
They should have checked out the Mac and Cheese Festival in Toronto, and they would have known.
Now, how many lawyers do you think went through school saying, you know, I really want to be part of a lawsuit where people couldn't catch a Pokemon.
For $1.7 million?
I bet you those lawyers are probably getting a cut of like 30%.
It's a drop in the bucket, though, Niantic.
Oh, Pokemon Go? Yeah. Pokemon Go, in its first 3 months of being a thing, made over $600 million.
Yeah.
So you think about that. Now, they pay 19% of that to royalties to Nintendo,
right,
and they are still filthy, stinking rich. And taking $1.6, $1.7 million of that is like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? But at least it's appeasing the masses.
That's true.
Big thanks to Roy W. Nash and our community of viewers for submitting stories to us this week. Thanks for watching the Category5.tv newsroom. Don't forget to like and subscribe for all your tech news with a slight Linux bias. And for more free content, be sure to check out our website. From the Category5.tv newsroom, I'm Sasha Rickman.
Thank you, Sasha. And I'm Robbie Ferguson.
And I'm Jeff Weston.